Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The South Dakota Art Museum in Brookings is hosting Nordic Echoes. It's the first major traveling exhibit to feature contemporary Nordic folk art from the upper Midwest. It honors more than 200 years of human migration from the Nordic region to our region. When people came here, they brought their art with them. Paper cutting, weaving, carving. The traditional methods live on. But today, rose mauling, for example, might appear painted on a plate designed to protect a home from the COVID virus. As I walk through the exhibit, I am nearly undone by all the intricate details. I lean as close to the art as I responsibly can. I'm looking at stitches and fabric and thinking of my grandmother's hands at work. The figurehead of a fiddle is carved into the smooth likeness of the artist's friend, wearing her traditional Scandinavian headpiece. It took 400 hours to make. On the back of a carved chair, here perches a little wooden bird. It's said to whisper into the ear of the person who sits there to rest. Listen carefully. The gallery next door is under construction. The knocking and shuffling seems to add to the experience, as if the artisans themselves are nearby and at work on the next beautiful object. Now, many gallery visitors are enchanted by an expansive installation of delicate paper cutting. Think of a full-sized sled from a Hans Christian Andersen book. But look closer. This isn't the pleasant chapter in the fairy tale. It's the darker one. In this piece, red foxes and pine marten, loons and timber wolves and white-tailed deer are all fleeing in terror from sharpened flames. Artist Sonia Peterson has used the traditional art of paper cutting to respond to fires in Minnesota, California, Canada, an ecosystem turning to ash. Throughout the gallery, a melody pulls you through the space. Artist Tia Keobonpeng has several pieces in the exhibit, including a short film. That's her, humming. More on that in a moment. Along with the film, Keobonpeng has several large pieces that feature geometric patterns, circles, in vibrant colors. And after spending time with her work in the gallery, I really wanted to know more. She agreed to talk with me ahead of her visit to Brookings next week for a gallery visit. If you listen often to In the Moment, you probably know by now that I am fascinated with some of the art that has its genesis in the early days of the pandemic. That's the story here today, too. Here's Tia.
January of 2021, 8 months into distance learning, my fourth grader could no longer remember what he needed to do. And so I needed to start attending class with him on the computer at home. And the first lesson, he goes to a Montessori school in St. Paul called the Great River School, and his teacher, Maddie Brossart, started the class with geo means earth. So geometry is just measuring the earth. And that statement really struck me as a different way of looking at order and systems. I had been, for sure, in the year prior, but even before that, looking at the societal systems that had felt to me like they were imposed on me, these expectations and boxes that I needed to fit myself into. And so to think about geometry as reflecting the earth and reflecting the natural order felt really profound, and like my brain just flipped upside down, you know, and started to see things different, see geometry differently, but to see the world through geometry differently. And then the exercise itself was to construct two interlocking triangles by first making a foundation of circles. And so we started with compasses and a central circle, and then we moved the center of our compass to the edge of the circle and made another circle of the same size. And we kept moving the center of our compass to the intersections of those circles until we had this foundation from which we could then pull our ruler out and start connecting those intersections with lines. through intersecting lines, we created these triangles, but you can also create hexagons and squares and rectangles and parallel lines and interconnecting lines. And Maddie had said these patterns can repeat infinitely. Like if you just keep extending these lines out, they will just go on and on and on. And he challenged some students to, if you're interested in this, keep going. And so my son and I did the assignment, and as soon as we got the triangles, he ran off and was done, and I just kept going. And literally, that class changed my life and changed how I see the world.
Yeah, you were already an artist, a designer, but this created a new creative practice for you. How did it become part of your creative practice and your self-expression of not only art, but identity?
I think in some ways I've always been an artist. I grew up with an architect for a father, and so I really learned to see the world through a creative lens really, really early on. I had gone into design. I didn't know how to be the artist I am today. And so I took what I call a detour, but really it was just an experience, a journey, a path of collecting different skills through architecture and design and jewelry making and metalworking. It wasn't until I turned 40 in 2017 that I really allowed myself a little bit more space, because I had been making jewelry and it was a creative business. The story I told myself was that I was being very creative, but in fact, a lot of what I had done was develop systems for creating products. And I spent the majority of my time doing more businessy type stuff, promotion and assembly and shipping and that sort of thing. And so I gave myself 30 minutes a day to do a drawing a day. And so that, in 2017, that felt liberating. And I learned how to practice a little bit every day, and it compounded, over 2.5 years. I continued every day for 855 days. And then I realized by that time that I was ready to do something that do work that took more than a day to finish, or more than 30 minutes or whatnot. But at that point, I had really come in tune with my creative spirit. And so when I attended that geometry class, and when I wanted to spend every waking hour mapping out these circles and patterns, I very quickly shifted into this daily practice. And so I allowed myself to explore one piece a day for 100 days. And it was through that exploration and of pencil mapping out these circles, always starting with the circle, bringing in you like using watercolor to pull out one pattern, and then using thread to pull out another. And even at that time, when I structured that, when I brought the thread in, it really felt like it did two things. It allowed me to emphasize two different patterns at the same time, and the physical motion of stitching felt like I was like marching through this new way of seeing, but also stitching it to my muscle memory. So it was a very like a visceral, conceptual sort of thing where I was teaching myself how to see. And it was during that 100 days that, through my ancestral research that I had been doing of mapping out my family tree, that I had discovered my grandpa's grandmother was born in Norway, and that didn't track with the story that I had been told about who I was and what my heritage was. And so in a way, this inquiry into lost bloodlines, which, it took me a while, but I did confirm that, his grandmother was born into a Sami family, and that is one of two Sami lines in our family that we didn't really know about or acknowledge. And so it became a means of reconciliation of these narratives and stories that I had been told, and how and why we didn't know about this part of our family.
Because what did you think your heritage was before? All Finnish.
All Finnish,
All
yeah. And
Finnish.
there's, a lot of folks, I think, in Minnesota in particular, but I think Finnish Americans, there are narratives about being 100% Finnish, which this notion of being 100% anything is can be traced to eugenics and quite honestly to the treatment of the Sami people in Sápmi, this idea that you're 100% anything. And it's a flawed way of seeing human beings, but it's also rooted in colonization and rooted in assimilation and the powers, the social powers to fit in, and not just to fit in because you want to be liked, but to pass as something because rights are attached to that, treatment is attached to that. And so it's really, it sent me into a very, probably a lifelong journey of learning and understanding the history, the current landscape, political landscape, and the dynamics of disconnection that comes from migration of human beings. And my husband was born in Laos and came to Minnesota as a child. He was almost 9 with his family. They came as refugees in 1979. And so I'm examining my family many generations back while I'm witnessing first generation assimilation to American culture. And so it's really a powerful,
Yeah.
powerful lens.
And so the time that it takes to do the stitching and the pencil work and the watercolor work and creating these really expansive art pieces that I was able to sit and spend time with in our Brookings Museum, that's all part of a process for you. You also went home, or you went on a journey. You went to a physical journey and you filmed that. Tell me a little bit about that journey and what you wanted to capture in a sequence of visual images that would have impact not only for you, but for viewers.
Yeah, I had, I think, really the clear vision that I had before going on this trip. So it was in 2022, October. I flew into Finland and up to Oulu, which is the town that I lived in as an exchange student when I was 18. And I drove north along the Finnish and Swedish border, which is the Torneo River. And then jogged over to go up into Norway to Kautokeino and then up to Alta and then west to the Kvanangen Fjord, which is where Tjäkkan, the village of Tjäkkan is. And that is my understanding of where my great-great-grandmother was born. And I was essentially tracing this journey, went Tjäkkan, and then I went west to Skibotn and then back down into Sweden to Vettasjärvi and Pärnu and the Alavada area of Sweden. And I was tracing her birth location, her parents' birth location, and it brought me to my ancestral village in Sweden. And it connected me to living relatives, and I have fostered the beautiful relationship with a relative there who is a knife maker. And so the journey turned out to be everything I needed it to be, but when I embarked on it, I had no idea what I would experience or find. And the only vision I had for this film that I wanted to make was that I wanted to get footage of me walking in circles on the earth where my great-great-grandmother was born. And that is what you see in the film. You see me on the edge of the fjord at low tide. So I'm walking on all of these rocks. And later, several hours later, the next morning, I go into where I had been walking was completely submerged underwater. And so, like, it was a moment, and it was there's a certain level of naivety in there, like I made this dress with a friend of mine, and so the dress was made for the film, and there are 16 circles on the hem of the dress, and so this 16 is the number of great grandparents that every person has. And so Wilhelmina is from that generation. And so it's her and her husband were both Sami, but she was the one in our family that we didn't know. And so the circles on the hem of the dress are really my way of stirring that generation and stirring her and bringing her there, but also letting her lead me and kind of like learning about her. And I'm only really wearing that dress in that in that location. But the other footage that you see, was footage of our village Vettasjärvi in Sweden. And I took the footage before really knowing anybody there, before I met the relative who I met him the next day. But I took footage of the exact spot where my ancestors lived in this whole village. Like, I went right to that spot, and that's the footage that you see. And I only learned that after the fact. There's also, towards the end, there's an aerial sort of spinning of a spot in Pärnu, which is prior to settling in Vettasjärvi, my ancestor. That was where he paid land tax for his reindeer. And within that footage is the descendant of the cousin who he sold his land tax to. His house is in that footage, but I didn't meet him until the next year. So there's just these very powerful experiences that I unknowingly documented, that I unknowingly went to. Like, in my mind, I didn't know, but somehow my body chose to stop there. And so a lot of what I'm doing in the work, in the labor with the threads and the, so I'm using colored pencil now instead of watercolor because I'm working on wood. Because as the threads got more dense, the paper wasn't strong enough. So in 2020, like later in 2021, I shifted to wood. And so a lot of what I'm doing is trying to access knowledge that my body has, if that makes any sense, and to learn. And so, even when I turned 40 and came back to art, one of the driving forces was this void, this, like, the only way to really describe it was like a grief that I felt. Not knowing, like, I grew up not knowing either of my grandmothers. One died right before I was born, and one died after. And I was grieving grandmotherly love, knowing grandmothers, the wisdom that grandmothers can share. And I worked through some of that in sculpture work. But I think what I've come to is that the one grandparent that I did grow up with was my grandpa, my mother's father, and this is his line that I am exploring. And he was born on April 16th, 1911, and I was born on April 16th, 1977. And so there's just this echo that's happening, and so I'm just learning to listen, and I'm learning to hear the messages. I'm learning to listen to them, and I'm trying to act accordingly. And that is a beautiful Sami phrase, gulat guldalit, that I've learned this year. And I think it explains what I am trying to do through my work.
And to be the kind of relative today and to live your life in a certain way. That's large. That's a large thing to explore.
It is.
Tell me a little bit about the Northern Lights, because we are all sort of experiencing them right now in the region, and you have a piece that evokes the Northern Lights.
Yeah, I thought about that last night. I'm like, wow, the timing is perfect since I knew I was going to be talking to you. Yeah, the first time that I saw the Northern Lights, I was 18. I was living in Finland as an exchange student. I lived with the family, a host family, that whole year. And it would have been probably January or February. We drove way up north for like a winter break, and it was just dark, like the darkness of the sky up there during winter. Like, you just can't quite grasp the impact of the darkness. And then all of a sudden, half of the sky was green and it was moving, and it was the most profound thing I had ever seen in my life. And I've never really, I don't know if I'll ever see them like that again. I haven't yet. But I was so in awe. And so I feel like that was a really striking moment. But as I was working on the piece that's in the Nordic Echoes show. That piece was originally exhibited at my exhibition at MIA in 2023, in an exhibition called Revealing Threads. But that piece is kind of look it evokes the Northern Lights in the threads, but it also kind of is a way of holding and understanding or thinking about the ways in which people engage the Northern Lights. And so, like, as a Minnesotan, it's like it's exciting, right? It's like we don't normally get to see them. Last night's display was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I mean, I'm in a city and we could see them with the naked eye. Like, that is remarkable. But then, looking at my like Finnish heritage, they call them the Revantulet, which is the foxfires. And so, like, someone I just saw someone's post with their Northern Light footage. They had pulled some sort of Finnish song of a little child singing about the Revantulet, and there's all these kind of like almost like fairy tale type mythical stories about it, and how the fox has this special job where the other animals are constellations, and the fox gets to their tail hits the frozen ground and sends the Northern Lights up. And that's really, a different layer of sweetness and engaging them. And then when I was learning and reading about the Sami, like they revere them and respect them in a way that only comes from really being close to the land. And they believe that the spirits of ancestors are in the Northern Lights. And speaking to an Anishinaabe friend of mine, it's like it's similar for her. It's like you don't reach out to them, you don't sing to them, you don't you need to be careful even going out and looking at them, because you could be taken is kind of the weight of that. And so there's I think three different ways of seeing it, and it reflects in many ways disconnection from that real deep tie and connection to the earth.
Yeah. Speaking of songs, you find this melody on your trip that we hear in the film. Tell me just a little bit about hearing this in your head and what it means to you.
I was filming the sunset, and it took a really, really long time for it to go full black. And I just started. This was on my journey. I was in Kilpisjärvi, which is right on the border of, it's like the first town once you cross back over into Finland from Norway, but it's also really close to Sweden. So it's this very special spot. I guess I just started humming it. For the recording, I think what I love about how it's recorded on the film, I recorded two different tracks, and this is just me like doing it not very technically. I'm not a you're a radio station, so I wasn't recording like a radio station or using high-end technology. I recorded one track watching the film through, and then I recorded the other one completely separate. So I couldn't hear it. I just changed how I was doing it. And so what you hear is basically this mashing of two different things. And there are times where it sounds like harmony, and there are a couple times where it's a little like there's a dissonance to it, which I kind of love. And I think that kind of captures, I don't know, the spirit of how I work in a way. It's like there's magic and beauty to be discovered where you just set something up and you let it then live that way.
Yeah, I love that. The exhibit Nordic Echoes, Traditions in Contemporary Art is on display now at the South Dakota Art Museum in Brookings. You can see weaving, carving, blacksmithing, paper cutting, and other traditional skills used in contemporary art practices. The exhibit is open now through January 3rd. And that's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. We'll leave you with some sounds from Wayfind. It's the short film by Tia Keobon Pang. Thank you for listening.